You have an imagination of leadership that I think is wrong-headed. One person gets the insight, has the knowledge, stands taller than others, and that's leadership. Speaks louder than others, you know, wields power better than others, and that's leadership. And I think Jesus actually confronts all of that. And he says, if you think that's what leadership is, you've got a wrong-headed notion.
Well, welcome to the As One Leadership Podcast. Today's guest is Pastor Alan DeMond from New Hope Baptist Church. Really thrilled to be able to chat with you today. Welcome to the show and thanks for being
our guest. Thank you, Luke. Pleasure.
Yeah, and you've come all the way from a fair way away, so we appreciate you making the travel.
Yeah, just up the road in Blackburn North.
Yeah, okay, it's not too far away. So you've been the senior pastor of New Hope Baptist for about 24 years now, which is a really good stint. And so it's a real thrill to be able to sit with you today and hopefully we can glean some of the wisdom that you've learned over the journey, I'm sure through many successes and probably through some things that didn't work as well. And often you learn more from those times than you do from the successful ones. So it'd be great to press into some of that today and hopefully learn for us and for the guests as well. So a lot of people know of you, particularly in Victoria, in the Baptist movement and nationwide. But I thought it'd be really good for the guests that don't know you and just to hear some of your story to start. So things like where were you born and what was life like for you growing up and what sort of brought you all the way to the point of life you're at now?
Thank you, Luke. It's a pleasure to be here. Pleasure to do this. Have a good conversation. So I am an immigrant to Australia, and as soon as I start talking, people can pick that up.
Yep.
Canadian born, married to a Canadian, and we have three beautiful children. We moved to Australia in 1995, and this has been a wonderful home for us and for our family. We came to give leadership at New Hope Baptist Church. It was then Blackburn North Baptist Church. And that's where we've been, you know, that whole season. I grew up in a home that was a strong and warm Christian influence. So I've always had a sense of the privilege that it is to be gathered up in God's love and in God's mission. And like many people who've shared that story, I came to a place where that became more real for me, and then I had to make decisions around that and commitments around that, and disappointed God on the journey, and at other points got it right, and grew in that. My dad was an intellectual who questioned everything. My mom had the most beautiful, straightforward faith. We trust, and it's all good, and that shaped in me a real duality of academic interests and just passionate faith, for which I'm very, very grateful.
Oh, it sounds like a really good rounding off, having a bit of both of those.
Yeah.
It's good
to
think deeply, isn't it? But it's also good to have faith. So, that's really good. So do you think you're more like your mum or your dad?
Good question. probably my dad. He was, always wanting to think things through. I've got a lot of that in me. And that has been an incredible blessing by seasons, you know, where I'm looking at something and thinking, oh, we need to do another round of thinking here. But it's also a challenge because it can get me lost in strategizing when really we need a prayer meeting and then we need to just launch. And so, you know, it's getting that balance right in leadership, I think, is a constant challenge. We follow a savior and we serve in the power of an all creative, amazing God who wants us to think, but then wants us to watch what he can do.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. That's great. It sounds like it's been very helpful on the journey. So you've talked a little bit about your parents. What are some of the other main influences in your life, both people and experiences over the journey?
Like many people, I've got a few people in the church in my early years who were very significant in the way they modeled what Christian commitment looks like. So I had a youth pastor, and he went, above and beyond the call of youth pastoring. And I had meals with their family repeatedly. You know, he gathered me into his own life, and I saw what it looks like to live out a Christian commitment. To work in a church environment, and I've often reflected back on what an amazing experience that was. Then there were educators along the way and peers in school. I had some mates in school where, you know, we sort of took parts of the journey and went deeper, challenging each other, growing together. So that community experience in discipleship, yeah, so significant.
Yeah, for sure. So moving countries, you know, coming from Canada to Australia, I've heard they're fairly similar, but I imagine it's a big step coming to a different country. So what brought you here in the first place? And when you came, were there challenges transitioning into Australia?
So the reason for coming was the call of the church. So we came to serve at New Hope. And the differences, all the really profound ones, confront you in the first 24 hours, yeah, right? We're driving on the other side of the street, you know, everything's inverted.
Yep. Lots of creatures that can kill you.
Lots of creatures, yes, that's right. That's right. Snakes and bugs and all that kind of stuff. And all of that, you know, is the confronting stuff that was, you know, referenced in Canada as we were moving, and we met it as soon as we came out here. Then you start to run into all kinds of other stuff that are bits and pieces that are, you know, in the culture, and sort of come to appreciate that every culture has that. Every culture has the stuff that you confront immediately. You know, oh, your language is different, your food smells, you know, all that.
Yep.
And then you reach a place where, oh, wow, we've got so much in common. But you keep going, and it's the subtleties of difference and variation. So that's certainly our experience coming to Australia. It's been my experience serving in a multicultural environment, you know, in the church, and constantly thinking about the ways in which we need to find the gifts of God in those differences, and then challenging each other to kind of step up to kingdom culture. Because at the end of the day, Canadian culture, you know, it's awesome. Yeah. Until you meet what's not awesome.
Yep.
Australian culture is the same.
Yeah.
You know, Persian culture, Chinese culture, congregations we have at New Hope, all seeking to transcend to kingdom culture, because that's where you find the culture that critiques everything that we're bringing to the party.
Yeah. Yeah. I think one of the U2 songs says, I believe in kingdom come where all the colors bleed into one. I think it's a beautiful line and very true in the church, isn't it? It's a very multicultural hub.
Powerful, aspiration.
All united around not a common interest or a nationality, but around Christ. It's a really awesome thing. So New Hope, 68 years old.
Mm-hmm.
You're the third pastor of the church. So obviously it's got a great history of stability.
Yes.
Not much chopping and changing and really good traction with each pastor that's been there. And so when you commenced, the previous pastor had been there for 22 years, which is a really long stint, which you would know all about now. So big shoes to fill when you're stepping into that. And no doubt there would have been some challenges with that. And so I guess it'd be good to know some of the lessons you learned when you first stepped into the senior role at New Hope, taking over from someone who was there such a long time.
Mm. Fascinating experience. I'd actually served a church in Canada for about 10 years and had been senior pastor in that church for about 9 of those years.
Okay, yep.
So I came to Australia with, you know, certain sort of sense of, I think I know some things, you know, and 35 years old, landed in Melbourne and took up the responsibilities to lead what is now New Hope after almost a 3-year internship. So my predecessor, Jack, amazingly strong leader. He had just done incredible things in seeing this church grow, its evangelistic impact, and very much revered. He and I would be chalk and cheese.
Yeah, okay.
Very, very different in terms of the sort of people we are, the personalities, the way we would frame leadership. So, it created some interesting dynamics around just the challenges, stuff I had to work through, you know, what part of this is just stuff I have to just own? What part of this do I have to confront and challenge? And how do you take up a role when there's been such stability, which is such an amazing gift? Mm-hmm. So the kingdom of God is well served by people who just keep going a long distance in a faithful direction, you know, trusting and serving God. And then when there's a big transition, how do we work our way through that?
Mm. So you were called here with the purpose of being the senior pastor, but with a 3-year transition, which is a fairly long transition, isn't it?
No, sorry, I've confused that.
Okay.
There was 3 years that the church did not have a senior pastor.
Oh, okay, yes.
Yeah, yep. So Jack finished, and then there were some, what they actually did is they had a number of people form sort of a committee of leadership.
Yeah.
And then it took a while to do the search. And when they'd asked everybody else and got to the bottom of the list, they knocked on my door and I said, oh, yes. So we started after a gap. And so it was both the longevity of the former senior pastor and the gap that made up the dynamics of us stepping in. So you can imagine a 3-year gap with a wonderful group of people, you know, serving as a committee of leadership, but lots of things had moved into the power plays had shifted into really challenging dynamics.
When there's a vacuum, it happens pretty quickly, doesn't it?
Yes. Yeah. Yes.
So you think it was an advantage having the 3-year gap, or would you have rather have gone straight from an existing long-term pastor into the
role? Hard question. Mm. Pros and cons.
Yeah.
And probably you could make an argument either way. I don't think there is any simplistic, neat, and orderly way to make that kind of transition. Yeah, there's going to be pain. There's going to be work, and it's probably more about trying to figure out how to maneuver through it rather than hoping that there is no challenge.
Yeah, people are messy, aren't they?
People are messy.
Put people there, and ideas and thoughts and history and all that. It's complicated for sure. Yeah, so you've come into the role. No doubt there would have been comparisons. You know, Jack did it differently, or looking back to the past, and some people would have probably been ready for something new. I think comparison these days is difficult. And I think with things like social media particularly, a lot of people struggle by looking at what seems perfect on a social media page and comparing themselves to this perfect image that's been projected, which is likely to be false anyway. How did you go when you came? Obviously, it was before social media time, but how did you deal with some of those comparisons?
Yeah, lots of comparisons. Mm. And it's odd because you can see so clearly on the surface that we're not alike. Mm. And you bring that into the mix. You know, I'm not that person. Why are we making comparisons here? I remember in the earliest months, I would receive correspondence from members of the church who were unhappy with something or wanted to, you know, get something in front of me. And the tone of that correspondence, Luke, I remember reading it thinking, good man. And I actually went to a colleague and you know, with one of those letters, and I said, what, look at this. Why is this so, you know, like this? And my colleague smiled and said, oh, they're not writing to you. They're writing to the former senior pastor.
Oh, wow.
That's a letter, and this person had been around for a while and was able to identify that, yeah, I've seen that sort of letter before, and that was the tone, and that was the tactic, and that was the environment. And so without any critique of what that environment was, there was an approach that, you know, you corresponded. You corresponded at a fairly heightened level of angst to get your point across. And so I was not only inheriting this, but in many senses was that person.
Yeah.
And so in that instance, the comparison was about me understanding I'm going to have to assert some realities. I am not that person. Mm-hmm. And I've made an equation here that is not true. And I will have to lead into that space. I will have to, you know, carve out a space. Who am I as this new person? Mm-hmm. And what will that look like? Sometimes the comparisons are right on the surface, and sometimes they're funny. So my predecessor was a large, tall, dominating physical presence.
With an Australian accent?
With a strong Aussie accent. And I am none of the above.
Yep.
And so during his 20-year time in leadership, they'd done some renovations in front of the church, and they'd built a pulpit. And they'd right-sized it for him.
Yep.
So when I arrived, you know, I needed several books to stand on,
just peeking over
to
the
be
top.
Seen. And so that created humor, but it also created a kind of an opportunity for me to assert my own difference, you know. And I moved out from behind the pulpit, took my space at center stage with no pulpit, and, you know, asserted some of what was my strength and what I could bring to the mix. Mm. And was able to accelerate some change there because it was just sort of obvious that pulpit has to go. You can't even see me behind it.
Yeah.
and so that was really good. Sometimes the comparisons are really painful.
Yeah.
Really painful. I remember a members meeting that we had. Somebody actually stood up, believe it or not, in the meeting, and they said, when Norman was the pastor of this church, the Spirit of God was here.
Oh, wow.
When Jack was the pastor of this church, the Spirit of God was here. I wish I could say the same today.
Oh, wow. That's a big hit, isn't it?
And in moments like that, you just, you get the resignation letter that's always prepared, you know, out of your closet.
Yep.
And you just feel so judged and inadequate. It's unfair. But it's sort of stepping up and going forward and underscoring that's not true. Like that's just not true. It's extreme. It's wrong. Mm-hmm. Surrounding yourself with good people and friends who can kind of quickly come to your aid.
Yeah.
The comparisons can be crazy.
Yeah. I think a lot of young people particularly, they look at ministry and they see the glamour in inverted commas of ministry. You know, I can preach up the front and I can lead. And I think what I've learned is that the glamour is a very small part of ministry, and even the glamour is not that glamorous. But there's a lot of hard work and there's a lot of things you face, like comparison and criticism and sometimes people just being unreasonable. And I think you've got to be self-aware in all that process for sure, but it can be very hard. And I think, you know, a sense of call is really important in those times.
Yes.
Because, you know, I think even for myself, there's been a couple of seasons where that's probably the only thing that's kept me going, is that I feel we're called to this.
Yes.
And I'm sure you've experienced a similar thing in those times.
You feel inadequate most of the time.
Mm.
You're wrestling with that sense of I'm supposed to know what to do here, and I'm terribly afraid that my best thought isn't going to be enough. And I want to impress, and I want to do well, and I want to be as good as Jack and Norman. Mm. And then somebody tells me the Spirit of God isn't even with us, and so the danger is you go to that self-judgmental place because it's always just a little crumb of something in those critiques.
Yep, little kernel of truth.
And so it's how do I then lead myself out of this place? How do I lead myself? Lots of great leaders have reminded us that that's the key. That's the number one task. That's been the most wonderful moments for me is when I've kind of gone to bed at night and thought, well, I don't know if I led anybody else well, but I think I led myself well today.
That's a good start. Yeah. If you don't start there, you can't let anyone else, can you? Yeah. So, no, that's really good. And I think it'd be really encouraging for people to hear that because we could easily look at Alan DeMond, you know, senior pastor of a fairly large influential church and think, well, he probably doesn't struggle with those feelings of inadequacy or insecurity anymore. But, you know, that's more for younger people. But I think the further you go in ministry, and it'd be good to hear your thoughts on that, that you still struggle with those things on a regular basis.
Yeah. And it's probably a two-sided thing because one of the challenges is as you get some experience, it should bolster your sense of, you know, God is faithful, we're going forward in this. But there's a really weird place where you can move into where, I know a thing or two. That can actually undermine. Mm-hmm. One of my most interesting sort of things that I've come to really own, and it's challenging, is that each thing you face and you think, well, I know what to do with this because I've seen this before, it isn't until you bump into the part of it that you haven't seen before that you're actually doing the leadership that you're called to do. So very, very little in life is a carbon copy.
Yeah.
You know, you meet somebody, you know, I've met you before. I know how to deal with this. And then if I continue down that path, I'm probably not going to be the leader I need to be the servant I need to be in that space. It's not until I bump into the piece where, oh my goodness, this is not like that.
Yeah.
You're not that person.
For sure.
And so it keeps you in this space of being a little off balance. I think if we're really pursuing stuff that matters, and it's for that we need all the resources of our faith journey, all the resources of our spiritual journey, because it is possible, I think, to sort of covet comfort a little too much, or you know, I want to know the answers, I want to be the answer person, and that can actually be quite counterproductive, quite dangerous.
Yeah, for sure. That's where I think the importance of being spirit-led comes to service, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely.
We need to be led by the Spirit in what we're doing. And I see it sometimes if you look back at old sermons that you preach and you said, oh, yeah, I'll go back, I did an illustration back there a few years ago and that was really good. And then you look at it and you think, oh, gosh, how did that ever work? Like, it doesn't fit the moment. It doesn't feel like the Spirit's leading me in this moment. And so I've got to then seek His face and say, what do you want me to say to the people right now? So, yeah, it's a constant journey of leadership, I think, is developing, growing, and that never really stops, does it?
I pray it doesn't. Mm. I pray it doesn't. I think that wisdom of trying to be a lifelong learner, of always being in the posture of there's as much for me to learn here as there is for me to contribute, I do think is a very important part of the Christian journey and the leadership journey. Mm. And I think we've been dealt an unhelpful image of the leader as the go-to person and the in-the-know person. Mm. I think the spiritual gift of leadership is something we bring to the mix to help the community advance on God's mission. Mm. Not to be the, oh yeah, I'm the leader. I know. I'm the person who tells everybody.
Yep.
It's actually quite counterproductive because a flourishing community is one in which everybody feels I'm the person in the know relative to their particular gifting, the thing that they bring. And if as a leader with that gifting, I'm bringing that out in everybody, that's a great environment.
It's great leadership.
And great leadership. And it may actually cause me to feel a little smaller than I'd like to, and needing to posture in ways that my own ego is pushing me in the other direction.
Yeah.
I want, come on, applaud me here.
Yep.
But if I'm really leading in the way that I see this kingdom, image, it has much more to do with a whole group of people flourishing, finding vitality in their faith in Jesus, living that calling and just kicking goals.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that's a great picture of how the body functions and there's people around us that are so much better than us at different things. And we just all play our unique role and then the body all works together, which is great. So, for example, we've got Nathan recording this podcast today and you and I, if we're behind that camera,
it'd
probably
rubbish.
Wouldn't be working very well. I don't even know how to turn it on. So I'm really grateful for him. But, yeah, no, that's really wonderful. So you talked a little bit about the comparisons when you started. I'm sure as well as comparisons, there was probably some ingrained ways of thinking and doing things. And so in that time of transition, trying to implement change, what advice would you have to others that may be listening who are currently trying to implement change in a church or an organization? What are some things you learned in that time?
Yeah. It's always about change, isn't it? Mm. If nothing needs to be changed, then a leader is not required.
Yeah.
And so it's always about change. And I've heard someone say recently, I thought it was a really good insight, everybody loves to change. They just don't like being changed by somebody else with somebody else's agenda.
Yep.
And so I think that's where the tensions come. There is this vision of where we want to be as a community, where we want to be in Christ, where we want to be on this mission that God has us on. And we can probably articulate that, and then as we start to articulate that, we'll run into a little bit of, oh, I got a different view on what that is. And then as we try to actually figure out what are the steps to get there, we've got more dissonance and difference. Then we add a few more people. I mean, you and I, we'd get there quickly, but we add, a few more people.
Yeah.
And so it gets messy with lots of different signals and lots of different ideas. And I think a leader is trying to help that group of people and help in that environment to align the best of those thoughts, to sift things and kind of keep us moving. So it requires so much minutia work. I would love to go to the mountain, get the vision, come back and say, here's the vision, follow me. It turns out that I have to have a dozen conversations with people who didn't hear what I said in the public space, heard something else. Mm. We now need to go and, have a different kind of conversation and realign that or clean that up. It turns out that I'm in the mix and I got all anxious, at a point when I thought people weren't listening to me and I acted badly. Now I got to go clean that up. So we've gone through enormous change at New Hope, and just simply because it's been 2.5 decades. Lots of opportunities. We've gone through change in our governance, change in our spirituality, and change in our physical buildings. Mm-hmm. And it's the last one that's the most obvious. You know, you see that when you drive by. It's actually the change in our spirituality, our governance, our culture, our kind of behavior that's the more significant and deep and life-giving, and all kinds of moments of resistance in that, and, you know, working things through. So it takes patience. It takes the long run, and I think thinking, always realizing that we're just making a little gain today. Mm. And a little gain tomorrow. And then we went backward on the third day. then we went forward again and forward again. It's a long journey of many steps.
Mm. Yeah, I came and saw you earlier in the year because we were looking at making some changes at Follow this year. And some of your cautions around some of that stuff were really helpful. And so I felt this year the changes we made were really successful because we're able to take people on the journey. And like you said, we were already way down the track, yes, myself and some of the other leaders, but to bring people at points where they felt like they could input, and but also laying the conditions that just because you have an idea doesn't mean it'll definitely be taken on board, but yes, it'll be considered and, yes, you'll be heard. And,
yes,
and when it got to the vote on some of those things, they were overwhelming, like I think 170 out of 172 votes.
Yeah, well done. And,
I think I learned from your wisdom. So that was really good. So, I think there's some good things for people to learn in times of transition for sure. So you've talked a little bit about the facility you've got at New Hope, and it is a beautiful facility. I've had the privilege recently to be there for conference days, and I came to a weekend service, which was wonderful. It's a beautiful space. So do you want to tell us a little bit about what happens in the space, yeah, and how has that building helped you to engage with your local community?
Yeah, it's a great tool. It's a great tool. And there's not a single building on earth that will do kingdom work. But there are lots of physical structures that can get in the way when a group of people are trying to do some good work. And we have thought for a long while about our physical property as a tool. And so do we have the right tool? How do we position that tool? And the physical structure that we have today, that journey began probably 1999, where we started that journey. And we actually had a bit of a build project. A budget goal, and we wanted to do some carpeting, move a wall or two, put a fresh coat of paint on. We're trying to raise some of money, maybe four times the salary of the pastor at that time. The project failed miserably. Mm-hmm. Couldn't raise the money. It was frustrating. The church had a series of meetings, conversations, searching for what God wanted us to do. We came back in less than 2 years and more or less said, oh, I think we got that wrong. I think we need to tear half the church down. It's probably a sum of money 20 times what we originally thought we were trying to raise. But it is gonna solve some problems, and it is gonna deliver some amazing ministry opportunities. And so that journey then, caught fire, caught imagination. There were resources that were freed up. There was, lots of interesting conversations and conflict in all of that. Look, like people deeply challenged in different ways. But we came up with the sense that what we're doing is building facilities for the community. So we weren't a group of followers of Jesus who needed to build ourselves a structure in which to do what we needed to do. We were actually a group of followers of Jesus who could provide our local community with something that was missing. So in that season, we'd gone and talked to different people. We had this idea, maybe we won't build anything. Maybe we'll rent spaces in the community and just engage in our neighborhood. So we went looking, and it's really interesting. We found it a little difficult, so we asked different community groups, where do you meet and have your, do your stuff? Mm-hmm. And they said, common answer, look, we meet in the schools and we meet in the churches. Those organizations build for their own needs. We make it work. Mm-hmm. So the penny dropped. We thought, what would happen if we built for the community's needs and we, as the followers of Jesus, made it work?
Mm-hmm.
And so that was the model that we adopted.
Yep.
And in two iterations with lots of time in between and, you know, lots of wrestling. We now have a community center which functions in our little region as a venue for all kinds of activity. So it's sort of going 24/7, not 24/7, but every day of the week, literally, and lots of activity. So we've built with movable walls and flexible spaces and community activities in mind. And then we think in terms of the followers of Jesus banded together who form this local Baptist church, providing hospitality for all this activity, creating networks and linking in and relationships and trying to start initiatives in Jesus' name that connect people in at different points, you know, help with life skills and all the different stuff that can engage people in relationship as we move along toward, you know, telling the story of Jesus and the source of our flourishing life.
Yep.
So that's very life-giving. I love serving in that environment. And so it's more or less we went out looking for a community center to rent, couldn't find one. So we built it and now host the community in that experience.
Yep.
And it's been cool. So we have, you know, the school graduations come and do it in our place. We were a voting station for the election. You know, the beekeepers meet in our place, the Probus Club, and then have meals in our cafe with, you know, with lots of our people. And so we're hosting and connecting. And it just sets up lots of wonderful human interaction with Jesus right there at the center of lots of that stuff.
Oh, I love that. I love what you said when you said about what's missing in the community and how can we provide that. And I think even with local council and stuff like that, they're not interested in people building churches so much anymore. But if it's a space that can be used by the church, which is great, but also by community organisations and schools and stuff, it's a win-win. So that's really great. And I think it's a great model going forward as well in the current environment we're in. So well done on that. So you talked about transitioning. You had this little vision. It failed. You had a 20 times size vision after that, and it succeeded. I think it probably talks to the power of vision a little bit. So you would have been able to see maybe some of that stuff in the future. How do you actually get people to see that? I think a lot of leaders probably struggle with vision. How do I first of all get a vision for the context I'm in? And then how do I communicate that well to a group of people to the point that they would actually go, yes, this is our vision? Any thoughts on that for people?
I reckon vision is a hard piece to this whole puzzle. So clear that it's needed and so clear that it has power. And the challenge, it seems to me, is to figure out what to say as a leader and how to right-size all of that conversation. Mm-hmm. So the macro concept of vision, I think, is really easy for us as pastors and Christian leaders. I mean, we just want more people to discover Jesus, yeah. And we want more people to be transformed by that. We want our communities to, you know, actually lean in and do what the Bible calls us to do, for goodness sake. Let's stop acting like, you know, children, Paul says. And you know, let's sure. let's live out this faith. And so aspirationally, the big ideas that we're after, I think, are not that difficult to kind of get a hold of. The challenge becomes, how do I speak about something that is on the path to that and right-size that expectation for where we are? And, you know, how much of that can we chew in the moment? How much of that? So that big vision is only going to happen in increments. So what is the right increment for what we're about to do? And how do we take this enthusiasm we have and that big sort of future picture and incarnate something? And so it's an instance. It's a step along a great big path, and it's something that is concrete enough that we can actually talk about it. Mm-hmm. And that's what makes it so difficult. Is I'm not just talking about vision as the great aspiration. I'm talking about an incarnated piece of this. So what is it? You know, the program with its elements, the project that we have, the new thing that these people have dreamed up. That's the really hard bit, because we're trying to incarnate something. Mm-hmm. And then vision has to do with inspiration. It's going to happen in increments. You know, I'm always talking about the kingdom of God in the future,
yeah.
But to actually enthuse people, I need something that is incarnated. It's one increment of a you know, a big thing. And then inspiration, I've got to be able to be excited about this myself personally as the point leader. And so one of the things I've often tried to pay attention to in this space, as you know, we're trying to move something, and I know that vision is a key part of this, is what's happening to me as I'm telling the story, as I'm saying, okay, well, this is you know, what it's going to look like, you know, the incarnation, and it's a piece, and it fits in this way. But now, as I'm telling you, what's happening to me? Like, am I getting bored with the language I'm using? I don't have a vision yet.
Yep.
Am I getting a little bit excited? And I've noticed you respond to something, and I've asked you a question, and you've come back, and oh, that's good, that's clarifying. And now I try that out on the next person, and get lots of people kind of leaning in. So I think those are the pieces that are challenging to work out. Vision at one level is me talking in a way that helps people see the future, so there's this inspiration in it. Vision at another level is something concrete and tangible that we're going to do, right? It's not just this wishful, that'd be great. So what's the incarnation of the beautiful aspiration that Jesus has given us? And that's the hard part. That's where we need the community to be dreaming together, and we need lots of ideas, and we need think tanks. But eventually somebody has to risk an opinion.
Yep.
Eventually somebody has to say, out of all those possibilities, I think it's this. We're going to go with this program. We're going to go with this initiative, this iteration, this solution. And as I risk that, I see what happens. So I'm the point leader. I'm going to risk this, and you light up, and Mary lights up, and we start to run with it, and then Fred just comes at it like a bulldozer. But it was just a little dent. We're still feeling pretty good about where we're going.
Yep.
You know, and so we let it multiply.
It's a critical mass of people that are catching the vision.
Yeah, So I, in my own personal life, you know, when have I had vision? It's always something that I see over my shoulder. Like for the next challenge in front of me, the next big thing I have to move, the next thing I'm, you know, looking at, I think, okay, that's a challenge. We've got to do something about that. I'm working away at vision, but I always know that, oh, we've got a vision here after the train has left the station. You know, the momentum is building. There's result. There's stuff happening. For me personally, it's always been incredibly difficult to just start with a blank sheet of paper, put the vision down, come to the meeting and say, I got this all worked out.
Yeah,
you know,
okay,
I am going to inspire the socks off you, and this will be perfect first time round.
Yep. Yeah, I think that's really good, because I think like the big vision set by scripture, isn't it? You've got the Great Commission and all of that, and you look at that and you go, we know what we're meant to be doing.
Yes.
But it's more, it doesn't say in the Bible, hey, build a building in Blackburn.
Exactly. This and so doesn't build a gift to your community. Doesn't say, you know, start an English second language program, and in the midst of that, put a Bible study so that people can learn English through the Bible, and I will draw them to myself. It'll blow your mind, which is one of the things that's happening in our world. Mm. So that has to be dreamed up. Mm. And it doesn't get dreamed up by me because I'm over here working on stuff, but somebody really close to that dreams that up. And then I have to give that space, and I have to help begin to articulate that and you know, tell that story. So I can bring so much to that as I pick up those pieces. So I think vision sits everywhere in the Christian community, and the sweet spot is when every follower of Jesus has a sense of that, you know, I know the big picture, and I know what I need to do next to serve that big picture.
That's
the sweet spot.
Yeah, for sure. No, I think that's really good, and the vision thing I think is a really important thing. I think people do struggle with it, but people give to vision, don't they?
They do.
They can see where we're going and what we're trying to achieve.
In every way. Give their time.
Yep.
You know, give their affections.
Yep.
And it's so true. And it is the profound challenge to keep trying to put that into words and, you know, concrete presentation and image. I've often thought in our own context, I know when we don't have vision a lot more clearly than I do, than I know, okay, here it is, let's go. And I know we have vision, you know, at the point where everybody else knows.
Yeah, for sure. Yes, and I think I love what you're saying about it being sort of a community project vision. It's not just one person coming down off the mountain with the big vision.
Yes.
It's sort of shaped in community. I remember a number of years ago I was asked to go and help a leader who was leading a worship team. And if you heard me sing, you know, it's probably not a place I should be. But anyway, I went in and my job was to help this particular leader because he would have all these great ideas that he would announce. And the problem was everyone else said that was a dumb idea. And he was getting frustrated and you know, a bit downcast because his ideas got no traction. So the first thing I did is helped him build a core team of people around him that, you know, before the dumb idea was announced, it could be shaped and challenged and so that when he did stand up to give the vision, he had the backing of some really godly people, some people that helped him think through it. And so I think that community part of vision is really important.
And I think it illustrates something, sort of the concentric circles. So we have an imagination of leadership that I think is wrong-headed. One person gets the insight, has the knowledge, stands taller than others, and that's leadership. Speaks louder than others, you know, wields power better than others, and that's leadership. And I think Jesus actually confronts all of that. And he says, if you think that's what leadership is, you've got a wrong-headed notion. In fact, leadership is somewhere underneath everything else, you know, serving. And so we need a point voice, no question. We need somebody to speak. We need Moses to say, we're going to walk through those waters. Mm-hmm. But to have that inner circle, to have that community who works away at that, you know, and then the next circle and the next circle, there's something about concentric testing wisdom, you know, strengthening ideas, renewing the language we're going to use that's very powerful.
Yeah, absolutely. No, that's great. So at New Hope, it is a larger church now. You've gone through a lot of transition over time. There's been projects, there's been ministries, people have come and gone. But there's a culture there. You can feel it when you walk in. Like I feel from an outsider looking in, there's a sense, and I also travelled recently to the UK with one of the pastors from New Hope and heard his you know, take on how things were going, and he was talking about how much he enjoyed working in that environment. And so culture is one of those things. I think vision's one thing, culture's another really important thing. What are some things that you've found helpful to build a culture and to maintain a culture in a church like New Hope?
It's really interesting when we have the culture conversations. I'll get vulnerable for just a moment. When I hear you talk like that, you know, I think, whoa, hope that's still true when people listen to the podcast, you know, because you feel so vulnerable in this space where it's all about human relationships. It's all about, you know, the people that we are. It's all about the stuff that Paul and Peter and John are calling us to, the way of living. And, you know, when that is really functioning well, it is a beautiful thing. When people are, you know, living out those values. And so at New Hope, we went through some really deep change. We talked a bit about some of that, but there was quite a bit of pain in some of that. And some of the changes that occurred, it wasn't easy for everybody. And so some people, you know, they got off the bus along the way. And so when we had pushed through a lot of the change, we really were in a new place. I had a really interesting spiritual experience, Luke, because I was carrying some of this stuff around. We've burst through, we've brought changes, you know, governance, spirituality, it's affecting our culture. There's a sweetness here. It's really beautiful. But I was still carrying in my head, yeah, but just wait, any day now, you know, something's going to happen. It's going to collapse. You know, it's all going to go south because I've been in the church long enough to know. Mm-hmm. So all these kind of things. And so I went to this conference and this speaker was talking about the seasons of ministry. Mm-hmm. And I thought, oh, this would be interesting. And then as they developed the metaphor, I became more and more uncomfortable, you know, because he talked about the season, you know, where you're planting, and then the season where you're reaping, you know, and then the season where you're resting, and then comes the winter, you know, where it, you know, it's hard, and it's you know, and he said, no, so some of you are here in this season, some of you, and he said for himself that he was in, you know, an early season and looking at harvest, and I thought, yeah, there you go, see, there's that winter's coming.
It's coming, yep.
And God spoke to me in one of those beautiful kind of ways where you just realized that was for me personally wonderful. God spoke to me and said, your winter is coming, but you're not in Canada anymore. Mm-hmm. You are in Australia, and winter is never the same.
No.
And you are not at the church that you came to originally, but I have done a new thing, and it has changed. And so this is a new season. And I took a hold of that, Luke, in a very significant personal spiritual way, needing to confront this aspect of leadership where, you know, we've moved to some place, but, oh, I know how this works. You know, we're going to fall back in the hole. But, you know, are these gains real?
It's a fear and a doubt, isn't it?
It's a fear. It's not healthy. That's right. It's unhealthy, this kind of anxiety that percolates. Because you get wounded in ministry. Like, you know, you get hammered from different directions, and then some of that we process well, but some of it we don't. Some of it sinks into us, and it affects us in different ways. And so we need mentors, and we need good people speaking into our lives and calling out this sort of stuff. Mm. And for me, this was a kind of a vulnerable place, and it was just a beautiful healing thing for me at many levels, because it wasn't just about, you know, buck up, stop being so, yeah, come on, it'll be all right.
Yeah.
It was actually more a sense of God is doing something here, and this is the gospel at work. Mm. This is what we're on about. And this, all this preaching and teaching and all this obeying, you know, the scriptures and walking this path, it does bear the kind of fruit that we're on about. There can be deep healing, not just in an individual's life, but in a system, in a church community. So we're quite jealous for that culture.
Yeah.
You know, we talk about it. We talk about what's good and what's not. We try to reflect on how do we hold this and steward this. So we think about stewarding that culture in faithfulness to God. And so values, you know, have come to the fore for us, you know, around the way we behave with each other. And so if there's a problem, if something isn't right, go towards it. Don't go away from it. You know, if I'm feeling really uncomfortable about a conversation we've had, I need to go to you and sort that out. If I'm identifying I didn't behave well in that meeting, I need to do something about that and clean that up. Leave everything better than you found it. It's one of our values. Kitchen sinks, you know, people that you know, work that you're called to do, leave everything better than you found it. And we have a few of those sorts of values that help us to keep driving culture to something that is beautiful and healing, not something that's okay. Mm. And that'll do, and it's just the way it is. We want more than that.
Yeah, absolutely. So I think Craig Rochelle says it's a combination of what you create and what you allow.
Yes,
and I think it's that creating something, and it's also tending it and making sure that when people are going off track that we're confronting, we're bringing it back, we're living it. All those things are important. So no, that's very helpful. Excellent. So culture in the world is always changing. So, I mean, obviously when you came from Canada, Australia is a different culture, but Australia is a different culture to what it was when you arrived and what it is now.
Absolutely.
To what it was last year, to what it will be next year. Yeah. Always changing. What are some of the changes, the big changes you've seen in the Australian church? And what do you think are some of the shifts that are going to happen in the church in the future, and how do we prepare for those?
Mm. It's really interesting when I first came from Canada, sort of making those comparisons, and you do it as one person with you know a little bit of experience in two places. You don't have a big bird's eye view. But when I first came to Australia, I virtually was predicting some of the things that we've seen happen, because Canada is a culture that's sort of further ahead in the secular journey, if you will, or you know, further along the path. So things are legalized in Canada. And shortly after, we have the conversation and follow suit.
Yep.
So when I arrived in Australia, we had religion in schools, you know, CRE being taught. And I thought, this is amazing. And it won't be here for a lot longer.
Yep.
So we should capitalize on the opportunity and, you know, keep thinking about how do we, you know, what are we going to do on the other side of this and so on. And As we have watched that, you know, we've seen all this movement sort of toward a silencing of the Christian voice in the places of power and traditional sort of platforms, kind of feel pushed out. But there's lots of research, McCrindle Associates doing interesting stuff, and the NCLS, and to suggest that, well, that's true. The thing we need to be paying attention to is that off of those platforms and out of the spotlight and you know in kind of quieter places, there's almost a renewal and an awakening and a shifting of the opportunity. Yeah. So in some of that research that they've been doing, they suggest that one of the things we should be doing, and I think this is fantastic, is inviting people to church. So you know, we've spent the last two decades wrestling as the church about connecting with our communities. Mm. Absolutely right. Absolutely necessary. The institutional church needed a rather staunch critique of its practices and its systems and its behaviors.
No doubt.
As we sit in this culture feeling quite chastened, you know, the Royal Commission, all these things, there's a huge opportunity for us to reconnect with the roots and what matters most and go deep into the vitality of our faith and just let that sit front and center, invite people into it again. Mm. So there's a sense in which I wonder, you know, is it becoming easier than we think? Mm. We went through a season where we felt we needed to strategize, you know, profound new thoughts and innovate. And that's always good. Let's keep the innovation. Let's keep the critical thinking going. But is there a sense in which we're almost doubling back to the very basic notion of a group of people following Jesus, fostering great health in community, relationship, the way we interact, the way we care for each other, the way we call each other out, the way we heal each other, the way we bring God's power into that. Mm. And then saying to, you know, all these people in our network, come drink beer with us. You know, come be in the mix with us. Yeah. Come and join us at the footy. Come and help us babysit our kids. Mm. You know, let us babysit your kids. Come to church with us. We sing some songs and it's pretty energetic and fun, and you might like it.
Yeah, for sure.
You might like it.
I think we're reading and sensing similar sort of things, and I think we, in a post-Christian world, we kind of sometimes cower in the corner and say it's all too big and it's too hard and no one wants to hear from the church. But I think the current self-project of our world is failing, and people can see that. And
yes,
we have an answer that's beyond ourselves. It's a bigger vision. There's a greater person. But not only that, there's some of the issues in society, things like isolation, and we have an answer to that, and it's in Christ-centered community. And so instead of seeing, you know, the woe is us kind of mentality and seeing all the problems, we can actually see it as an opportunity, and maybe it's not as big as what it looks. I heard someone use the example of David and Goliath recently, that Goliath looks so big until someone from a younger generation, in fact, stood up and said, actually, why aren't we taking this on, and took it down pretty quickly. So I think that's really a glimmer of hope for Christians and for churches to think, how can we actually, in this, as exiles, in this sort of current environment, how can we create places that are attractive, that people actually go, yes, there's something about that we're missing. Mm. So it's exciting, I think. Mm. Yeah, so it's good. Lots to think about in terms of that. So I think just want to shift gears a little bit, and you've touched base on it a bit already, because ministry can be amazing. You know, there's these mountaintop experiences and great joy when you see people come to know Jesus and lives saved and things growing, and they're wonderful. But ministry can be really hard. And I remember when I was young, I always looked up at the pastors I had, and it was kind of like they were on a pedestal and they were just holy, you know, and I could never be like that. And so why bother trying? And that was kind of the feeling I had as a young Christian. Until I sort of grew up and became an adult and played golf with them and realized they're not as holy as I thought they were. And so it made me reassess the idea of vulnerability and being accessible that way. And I think that's a really important part of leadership. Mm. And I think Jesus models that beautifully. You know, Jesus wept and was very honest and vulnerable, even though he was God in human form. So I think sometimes those pastors can be on a bit of a pedestal, but we know that leaders aren't perfect. And I think I've learned over time that self-awareness is a really important practice to exercise regularly for leaders, and a skill to have. I'd love to just pick your brain on a few of the lessons you've learned, and it might take us to a couple more vulnerable spaces. But no doubt we all make mistakes as leaders. So what would you say in hindsight, as you think through your time, particularly in ministry, what's your biggest mistake or regret that you've a regret you've got?
I think it's related to one of my, you know, weaknesses, vulnerabilities that I'm always needing to kind of grow in. So it's in the space of getting too infatuated with my own ideas too quickly. Mm. So we worked on something, I see a way to solve this. And then what that has led to that I regret is an over kind of zealous commitment to that and inability to hear what others are saying to me that would be really useful and really helpful if I could just listen. And so, you know, for me personally, when I'm in the pastoral mode, when I'm in the, you know, the kind of relating mode, I can listen. I can listen quite well. But when I think I'm in the leadership mode, I let some of that wisdom fall away. Yeah. And I kind of get in this posture of, you know, come on, Luke, I've explained this three times.
Yeah. And I think for visionaries, it's hard because our ideas are always the best ideas, right? So you've got this idea, you've gone down that road. Yeah. And when people start to challenge that or say other things, you think, no, yeah, I understand that, but it's not as good as what the idea I've got. Yeah. And
it's a dangerous space because it, you know, you feel quite confident in what you're presenting. Mm-hmm. And so the biggest mistake is letting that take over, and then I would have probably damaged some relationships along the way. Mm-hmm. That I look back and think, did that need to happen? Mm-hmm. Did that need to happen? How much of that was me, you know, being too committed to a thought that really needed to work its way through a bit more? And mm-hmm. how much of that was in the space of because your pride, you know, our pride, my pride, and leadership is such a, you know, a little cocktail of disaster.
Yeah, pretty tightly linked sometimes, aren't they?
Pretty tightly linked, and we don't want it to be, and the Bible is on again and again and again about the need for humility and Jesus' big idea that if you want to lead well, you need to posture as the servant of everyone.
Yeah.
Is such a captivating truth because it doesn't mean you go hide in the corner. Mm-hmm. It has to do with the way you front up at every conversation. Mm-hmm. And so it's in exactly this space, you know, look, I've got a great idea, but I'm actually here as a servant, which should then take me to the place of, you know, I need to listen, I need to process. Doesn't mean that I'm going to go with your idea and not mine, mm-hmm. But it's how I do that and then what fallout from that. And so, yeah, biggest mistake, falling in love with my own ideas and romancing them and marrying them far too quickly when we should have been in a courtship stage with, you know, lots of ideas.
Yeah, which often ends up with a better idea in the end, doesn't
Absolutely.
It?
Absolutely. Each person. Almost always.
Yeah.
And in fact, listening never takes anything away.
Yep.
It'll only give you another way to strengthen the argument for your idea.
Yeah, definitely. So what insecurities have you faced in leadership and how have you overcome those? Because I think even the best leaders have insecurities. And what are some of the ones that you've faced particularly?
I've probably named a couple of them already. This business of feeling inadequate, you know, you're constantly coming up against in different ways. And it always jumps out of the bushes. So, you know, you have a season and there's a few things happening and you've restored that self-confidence and, you know, I know what we're doing here. And then you hit something and that inadequacy bubbles up in ways that you have to be wrestling with it, stepping over it, going back to first principles. I'm not in this because I'm gifted. I'm not in this because I'm, you know, want the kudos. This is a calling. And so anchoring that in, you know, Jesus, this was your idea. Mm. So, you know, so here we are. And then that thing that I alluded to about, you know, the way we can bring worry into ministry about, you know, maybe it's all going to go bad, you know, and look, maybe it is, but that is not God's heart, surely. Absolutely. And that is not what it is to lead out of a position of being profoundly loved by the creator of the universe and aided in everything that is good and everything that matters by the Spirit of the living God.
Yep.
That needs to set up a posture of you know, hope and living out of that hope. Mm-hmm. So I'm not in control of all kinds of things. Mm-hmm. And in any given week, you know, two or three things I was really excited about moving along, you know, something happens, something collapses.
Yeah.
So it's the worry. It's the, you know, it's going to reflect bad on me. This is, you know, it's going to play out in a bad kind of way, and I'm getting anxious about that.
Mm.
I have to arrest that. I have to get in front of that. You know, that can pretty quickly take me to a darker place.
Yeah, and it doesn't have to be that way. I think that what you were saying before about the seasons illustration, and we go, oh, okay, I'm in this season. Oh, no, the next one's coming.
Yeah.
Doesn't have to be that way. No. And sometimes it becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy. We just sort of lead ourselves into it because we think, oh, well, it's inevitable. And God doesn't want us to be in that season necessarily.
No.
Sometimes he takes us through seasons like that. But
and sometimes he moves us from one continent to the other where the seasons still happen, but the whole experience is totally, totally different.
Yep.
So just for any podcast listeners who don't know, Canada is under like feet of snow.
Yeah, right.
And Australia is not.
No.
And so that experience of coming into a new season where, yeah, we'll have seasons, you know, we'll have new seasons, but this isn't just a new season, this is a new continent.
Mm.
And the conviction that that's what the gospel is, and that's what, you know, we can be a part of when we are in the flow with God's Spirit.
Mm.
That's what I have to keep returning to, and, you know, that's where the hope is, and that's how I fight my demons.
Yeah, good. I think living in Melbourne gives you great hope with seasons because they change so quickly, don't they?
Absolutely.
So if you're in one season, just wait 5 minutes.
Yeah,
you'll be in another
like
season. Yeah, what was it, 27 the other day and then 14 the next day? It's like, it doesn't kind of go like that. It just goes, it's amazing. unbelievable. So we talked a bit about some of your mistakes or regrets. What about the successes and joys? What would be one of the ones that you would say, yeah, that's a great, great joy or success in ministry?
Personal? Still in the personal, vulnerable sort of space. I try to do inventory on, you know, how has the Spirit of God helped me and grown me in terms of character? And if we had my wife here and she were part of this podcast, I think she would, back me up in this. that one of the places, so when I was a younger leader, I would go to the dark place of anger more readily. I would bring it home, you know, not so much in, I wouldn't go to a meeting and be angry, smarter than that. but I would allow myself to get frustrated, you know, in a way that would tip over into some ugliness. And I would allow myself in certain environments, you know, like at home, to kind of process that. I'm just, I'm angry, you know, this isn't moving forward. And that was never a good thing. It was never right.
Mm.
So just asking for God's help, having the right conversations, engaging with people, and seeing that shift quite substantially in my life has been a really good, like, personal character kind of aspect to all of that. In those early years, so when anger is a kind of a go-to place, and there's just a lot of frustration in ministry, there's a lot to trigger, you know, responses. This is not fair. This is not like somebody stands up in your meeting and said, the Spirit of God was here, the Spirit of God's not here. Come on, I want to fight you on that. to appreciate that anger is never going to be productive, but when it's your go-to place, it leaks. And so I could be like in the wrong kind of meeting because you never behave well out of anger.
No, for sure.
There is a kind of response to injustice that the Bible says, have that response to injustice.
Yep.
But that response is never to people. It's never to, what, this isn't moving fast enough for you, Alan? You should get righteously angered. No, never.
Yep.
It's to the deep injustices. And so walking that journey in my own life and experiencing so much more calm is just a wonderful thing in the leadership space.
Yep.
So I do not have permission to go to the angry place.
Yep.
I do not give myself permission. I give others permission to forbid that, to call it out, because it's unproductive as a leadership posture in any way, as a community posture. And so I've seen growth, and I celebrate
that's
that.
Awesome. That's great. So some people will be thinking, yeah, okay, that's where I'm at. I get angry, frustrated, and sometimes I must admit I'm at that point where you, and particularly with your wife, because she's a safe space to talk to, and you go home and you take the frustration, and you can't sort of do that in a church meeting or whatever, so you go home and you say, oh, this is not right and whatever, and I don't want to put that burden on my wife either. So how have you actually got better at doing that? Is it just a work of the Spirit, or is it having those people, like you said before, who can call you out?
Yeah, it is a journey. You know, and it's kind of steps and intentionality. I began to realize that I was doing a lot more damage to the relationship that I love and cherish with my wife than I had appreciated. So, you know, we both use the language of a safe place. Well, for who?
Mm-hmm.
right? And so, so for her, there's nothing safe or pleasant or appropriate and incredibly supportive. And so I read her support as, well, this is okay. But of course, you know, when I stopped to think and process that, no. Often it would be, you know, dealing with the frustrations, and then I'm back to something, you know, the next day, and we have a different conversation, and things are resolved, and I'm moving on. I come home, I'm happy the next day, and haven't debriefed, haven't worked it through. So we had a lot of good stuff in our marriage relationship, pushing into some of that, and her helping me to see some of the consequences. So when I got open enough to say, you know, what is this doing for us? What's this doing for you? Like, I feel like I need to vent. You know, the realization that why do I think I have the right to come home and vomit every night on the kitchen?
If you do it once, they'll probably clean it up for you. If you're doing it every night, it's a bit,
And so that was a big piece of it, is confronting what this is. And yes, there's deep frustration, and yes, that needs to be processed. But you know, opening the doorway to the angry space was doing harm, and then I could start to see it leaking into other things. You know, it was in the marriage. It was some really good conversations confronting. Let's talk about this. Let's work it through. I was fortunate in that. Anger never rose to a place of something, you know, ugly or, you know, abusive. It was more the, that's just not fair.
Yeah.
Why are you doing that? And it was unhealthy in the leadership space. Because how can you love people that you're angry at?
Yeah.
You know, like really love them and serve them. So, really honest conversations, Luke. You know, seeking out some people to help me. People that I trust, spaces where it felt safe to actually have the conversation, explore the triggers, what's going on there. Mm. You know, why would you think that's okay? Mm. Was a really big one. Like, because it's not okay, is it? And why do I think that? Like, why do I think because I'm here, you know, and like, so I used to then start to imagine, you know, all the church council standing in the room while we're having the conversation.
Yep. Yeah, that's good.
Things like that.
Yeah.
And then just praying and asking God to bring change, and because I knew that there's a healthier place. Mm. This idea of being a calm presence in your leadership is very captivating for me. The idea of being the person who, it's ramping up. There's a lot of stuff. You're telling me exactly what I don't want to hear, but can I actually remain calm?
Mm.
And I would often picture, and still do, Jesus in the midst of the conversation. I can't imagine him going home to Mary, you know, going to the disciples and behaving the way I was.
Well, in the midst of the storm. So what was he doing?
Exactly.
That's really great. That's very helpful, I think. So we're getting to the end of the podcast, which has been really great actually chatting to you. But one question I think is always good to ask leaders is, how do you keep recharged in your faith walk with Jesus? Are there things that you find particularly helpful?
Absolutely. So music is a big thing for me. I love the worship music. I am nourished by scripture and prayer, as we all are. I've found audio books and audio Bible, and Nicky Gumbel's Bible in a Year.
Yeah, really a lot of people read that every day.
Yeah, it's really good.
My dad got me onto it. I think he's like he gets a commission or something every time he signs someone up.
Signing people up?
Yeah.
Well, I do the audio track on that, and it's really excellent. So I find that very nurturing, you know, the creating those habits that feed me. So I grew up in an evangelical tradition that had a fairly rules-based, you know, approach. Mm. And one of the things that's actually become life-giving for me is to widen that out and appreciate that, you know, worship music can feed me pretty profoundly. Interaction with people who love the Lord and the conversation in the right place can really profoundly feed me. And the doing of ministry, not in the frenetic, crazy, oh, my diary's killing me way, But in that way that Jesus is met by his disciples and they say, you know, you must be famished. And he says, oh, I've set a feast. I've been doing the work of the kingdom, is nurturing to the soul. So I think it's a little bit about figuring out who you are and your diet and what works and paying attention to spiritual health and constantly nurturing that. Yeah.
Yeah, very good. We might finish with quick fire questions.
Yep.
Got four of them here. You ready to go? Favorite leadership book and why?
Probably Stephen Covey's Seven Habits. It's an old one, but just some lovely, sharp ideas in there about seeking first to understand rather than to be understood, and sharpening the saw, you know, working on your own capacities and the stuff you bring to leadership and not just the leadership itself, and just really practical ideas.
Okay. Number one tip you'd give to communicators to ensure they communicate effectively?
Yeah. Be clear. Be really, really clear. If you don't know what it is you're trying to say, neither will anyone else.
For sure. One scripture that you hold on to on a regular basis.
Yeah. So 2 Chronicles 20, verse 12, we do not know what to do, but our eyes are on you.
Yeah,
Jehoshaphat in the midst of a battle, and he's told that, you know, this big Moabite army is coming to wipe him out.
Yeah.
And he's got no options. He's got no, you know, he's got no army. He's got no resource. So he just throws his hands into the air. Calls on God.
Very good.
And that's his prayer.
Place of leadership, isn't it?
Yeah.
Often. What's God saying to you right now?
Yeah. I'm in a wonderful season of exploring the refreshing ministry of the Holy Spirit. So just discerning what that means, you know, for me personally, the ideas of walking in step with the Spirit, of actually leaning into the promptings that God gives and exploring that freshness of spirituality in that very tangible, very kind of nitty gritty space. That's just a bit of a fresh season for me. In that
sounds
journey.
Like an exciting one too.
Yeah,
it's really good. Well, thank you so much for spending time with us today.
Thank you, Luke.
It's been some very helpful stuff there. I'm looking forward to people benefiting from it, and really appreciate your time.
Pleasure to chat with you.
Thank you very much.
Thanks for listening to the As One Leadership Podcast, getting you in the room with experienced leaders so you can grow and thrive as a leader. This podcast is hosted by Luke Williams and brought to you by Follow Baptist Church. If you're listening to this podcast, please subscribe on your favorite podcast app for free and leave a review. Your feedback will help us to grow further and bring new, insightful content to you. For those watching on YouTube, please like this video, leave a comment, and subscribe to the Follow Baptist Church channel. Ultimately, if you found this episode valuable, please share it with others who can also benefit from it. We can't wait to share more experiences and knowledge in our next episode. From Melbourne to the world.